Bishus Marenu Harab Shlita. I'm very honoured to see such a wonderful turnout on such a busy day. But we're sitting in our minds to prepare for Yom HaKadosh, although I was intending to speak about Sukkos. But it's all interconnected. To start off with an idea for Yom Kippur, there's a Gemara in Sukkah which says, Omer Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Yitzhah Sha'adon Miskaber Olam, B'chol Yom. A person's Yetzer Hara is always out to control a person every single day. And were it not for the fact that Hashem helps a person, one would never be able to withstand the Yetzer Hara. And I find this a very interesting concept, because how does this tie up with our Bechira, with our free will? We have a free will and to choose between good and bad. So we enter the Aser Shimei Teshuvah and we demonstrate ourselves that we want to do good and we're battling with the bad, but we have that free will. And if Chazal tell us that the only way that we can control the Yetzer Hara is with God's help, then is there a pure Bechira here? Is there a pure free will? Because when we're choosing between good and bad, it's only with Hashem's help that we're going to be able to withstand the Yetzer Hara. And the answer to that seems to be, well, we have to ask Hashem. We have to ask Hashem to help us survive the Yetzer Hara. And if we ask Him to help us, then He will help us. As we say in the morning davening, V'sakneinu b'Yetzer HaTovu v'tasilinu me'Yetzer Hara, and we ask Hashem to save us from the Satan HaMashkis Midino Shel Gehinnom. So we're saying to Hashem, please help us get out of this. So yes, it does limit the free will slightly. But by asking Hashem, by asking Hashem to help us, we are bringing God into our lives. When we say to Hashem, please save us from the Yetzer Hara, we are saying to Him, look, I can't manage this without You. And then we are unable to perform and to function without Hashem's help. To bring God continuously into our lives is the message for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And there is in fact a Gemara Yerushalmi Brachos which says, Hashem says, if you leave Me for one day, I will leave you for 2 days. Yomayim Azvekom. What's the idea? You stand in front of a mirror, you walk one reflection towards the mirror, then the reflection comes towards you. You take a step back, and then Hashem, or the mirror image, takes a step back. Similarly, Hashem takes a step back. And that is what it means then. We can't manage without Hashem, but we have to do our part. And we're davening on Yom Kippur for Hashem to help us to control the Yetzer Hara. And as we enter Sukkos, we enter a period of Dveikus, to show ourselves clinging to Hashem. With the Teshuvah, not just of Yira, from fear, but the Teshuvah Me'ava. With love and devotion, we're doing the Teshuvah. My topic for today was a Sukkah-Astical approach. Don't want to give anybody the idea that we're going to have a lesson in Kabbalah. I'm not a Kabbalah man like that. Kabbalah lately. But I will start with a quote from the Zohar and make certain references. In Acharei Mos, Yisrael Varaisa Kutcha Berichu Chadinun. The Jewish people and the Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are all like one. What does it mean they are all like one? They are interrelated. They are inextricably linked. I like to picture this Zohar in the form of a triangle. The triangle, on one point of the triangle is Hashem. Another point of the triangle is the people Israel, and another point is the Torah, Oraisa. Chad Inu. They are one concept. And at us, the mitzvah of Sukkah, and we'll mention Abba Minim as well, we see how this interrelationship occurs. Some people might be wary of gematrias, but I'll start with a few of those. The gematria of the word Sukkah, Sukkah Samach Vav Kaf Hei, is 91. And that's the same gematria as Hashem Elohim. Elohim spelled as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Yud Kei Vav Kei Aleph Dalet Nun Yud is also the gematria of 91, as well as the word Omein. Omein is 91. When we say Omein, to a bracha in our prayers and so on, we are showing emunah, we're showing acceptance. We are saying, yes, this is true. Hashem is emes, Hashem Elokim. This is true, the Torah is true. I'm Yisrael, relating to Hashem and relating to the Torah. The sukkah has to have a measurement of at least 7 by centifachim, hand breadths, and 10 tefachim high. We'll come back to that more in a moment. But if we multiply 7 times 7 times 10, we get 490. 490 is the gematria of Tomim, perfection. Tomim tiyeh im Hashem Elokecha. That's the number God. The B'nai Yisrochel also notes that Chag HaSukkos, as it's written in the Torah, is 496, which is the same gematria as Levioson, the fish which the Tzaddikim will benefit from in the times of the future, the Sukkah of the Levioson. Whilst we're still on a bit of arithmetic, and we say Vasukkos Teshuv Shivas Yomim, says the Torah, Vasukkos there is spelled without a vav. If we take the gematria there, that's 480 Sukkos. And 480 is also related to the maximum shear of the sukkah. The maximum height of the sukkah is 20 amos. And an amma, as we know, is shisha tefachim, 6 hand breadths make the amma, and the hand breadth is 4 fingers, arba etzbaos. So if we take the height of the sukkah in fingers, as it were, you've got 20 times 6 times 4, 6 times 4 is 24, 24 times 20 is 480, which is the gematria of Sukkos. That's the Shach al HaTorah. The Rabbeinu B'chaye also dwells in this kind of approach, relating the Sukkah with the Torah. The Betzel HaSukkah, the shadow, the shade which is created by the sukkah has to have more shade than light, it is compared to the shadow of the Torah. One should always be in the shadow. Shalosh Tefanos of sukkah, the sukkah has 3 walls, and he compares that to Torah Nevi'im and Pesuvim. The height, the minimum height of 10 tefachim, he compares to the Aseres Hadibros. The 7 by 7 minimum width, he compares to the Sheva Chochmas, the 7 kinds of knowledge. The Cholol HaSukkah Shivim Tefachim, because if you have a minimum of 7 and you have 10 high for the wall, then that would be 70 Tefachim. He compares that to the Shivim Ponim LaTorah. There are 70 faces of Torah, as I'll say. And just like women are free from the mitzvah of Sukkah, Moshe Petrus Sukkah, so they are free from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. They obviously have to learn their mitzvahs and what they have to do, but to learn Torah Lishma, they don't have to do. The mitzvah of Sukkah is Vayom HaValayla, and so also Torah, Rav Yisro Bo Yom HaValayla. The Sukkah being closely compared to the Torah. The Alshich HaKadosh writes in his Perush Al HaTorah in Emor, in detail about the various mitzvahs of Sukkah. He starts off talking about the fact that the Sukkah is the Diras Arai, it is a temporary abode. We have to realize that when we are in Olam Hazeh, we are in a temporary abode. It's like a prusdor, a corridor, just like you'll make a Tzuras HaPesach, a shape of an entrance for the Sukkah. The world, in this world, we are in a prusdor, a corridor, leading to the Olam Haba. And Sukkot lasts for 7 days. Eretz Yisrael, Chutz La'aretz, more of course. The 7 days, as contrasted to Pesach. Pesach is to commemorate the Yetzias Mitzrayim. There you've got the seventh day being Kriyas Yamsuf, so you've got 7 days. Sorry, Sukkah then, Sukkot is 8 days, where the 8th day is the Yom Tov, L'mayla min HaTeva. But the first 7 days are 1 day being Mikra Kodesh in Eretz Yisrael, and that's to represent the first period of a life of a man when he is innocent from doing any Averus. Yomesh Noseinu Bohem Shivim Shomer is that the typical life of man is 70 years. 70 then is compared to the 7 days of Sukkot, Basukkot, Teshuv, Shivas Yomim. And then the 8th day, 8 is L'mayla min HaTeva, above the laws of nature, says the Maharal. 8 is Shemini Atzeres, which is once again Mikra Kodesh, once again it is Yom Tov. But those intermediate days of Sukkot are Chol HaMoed, when you can do certain kinds of work, when you don't have what's called Mikra Kodesh, we're not actually making Kiddush, and those are the days of relative gloom in the life of a person, because the person is enduring the tests of Olam Hazeh in the Diras Arayim. So, a person who lives in a Diras Keva is not Yotzeh. Now, it's true that there are quite a number of people here who might have wonderful built sukkahs with strong double walls and dome roofs with central heating. And there's nothing wrong with that, because the more cozy it is, the more mitzvahs you can do in it. You can sleep in it. It wouldn't be a cold place. And a sukkah should be made as comfortable as possible. And a person who is mitztayer, who has travelled from sitting in a sukkah, whether it's cold or whether it's wet, is potter min hasukkah, which is unique to that mitzvah and no other. Nevertheless, however luxurious you make your sukkah, there is still some form of discomfort. The fact that you are away from your normal abode, that you have to move furniture into it, or simply the fact that you are under the sky and that you do face the possibility of being injured by the elements. Even though when those elements come down, you can refrain from sitting in the sukkah, it is a diras arai, a temporary abode. That is the way of the sukkah. The temporary abode has to have a minimum of, we said, 3 walls, but it's really 2 and a bit. The third wall merely has to be 1 tefach, 1 handbreadth. So the 2 and a bit walls represent the Hebrew letter He. He is also 2 and a little bit. And says the Al-Sheikh, we know from Chazal, Olam Nivra B'He. It's a mystical idea. The world was created with the letter He, and that's why in Bereshis it says, Vayera Vayivoke Yom Hashishi, not Yom Shishi, and the He is a larger He in the Sefer Torah. Olam Nivra B'He, and that sukkah is illustrated by the He. And those 7 days which you're sitting on sukkah is commensurate to the 70 years of the life of man. Now, we have to be covered by sechach. The leaves which cover us are gidulo min hakarka, they grow from the ground. And they cause a shade, so there has to be more shade than light. And that shade should be the shadow of the mitzvahs constantly protecting you in your life. And when you are being protected by this shade, it will give you the protection from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like we commemorate the sukkahs from when we were in the Midbar, L'man Yedu Derosechem, and yours are that your future generations shall know, Ki v'sukkahs and shaftes b'nei Yisrael. Now there is an argument. Some say it was the Anei Kovod which protected us, the cloud of glory, which created that sail, that shade. And some say it was Sukkos Mamash, that we had proper Sukkos to live in, and we're commemorating those. But whatever it is, the shade represents the protection you have from the mitzvahs. So there is a din, says the Al-Sheikh, that the schach may not be made of anything which is makabel tumah. You might say, oh well, I've got a chair, the chair is made of wood, the wood grows from the tree grows from the ground, therefore I'll put the chair on top and make the schach with some furniture. You can't do that. Why not? Because once it's made into furniture, it's makabel tumah. The idea of not putting something which is makabel tumah into the schach is because the schach is representing your mitzvahs, which you are protecting yourself with, and you're not going to protect yourself with something which is makabel tumah. Similarly, there's a din with your schach that there has to be more shade than light. Last year I attended a bar mitzvah on sukkahs, and it was a very, very large sukkah, but it was made with a very thin and torn reed mat, and I was looking at it thinking, a lot of light coming through this. I'm wondering whether this is a kosher sukkah, whether I can make a bracha over it. But one doesn't want to embarrass anybody, and you're invited to a simcha, you know, what do you do? Well, at least you can eat the fruit and vegetables as if you're not in a sukkah. I did ask the rabbi present, and he agreed with me that it could have been perhaps furnished a bit. Without going into that, the mitzvah has to be more shade than light. It's very hard to measure. How do you measure more shade than light? Alright, there's a rashi about it, which gives us an idea, but whatever it is, the more shade than light means that if a person is not successful in being totally free from Aveira, at least, he should be entering Yom Kippur and Sukkot knowing that he's got more mitzvahs, more zechiyos than Aveiros. By having more mitzvahs than Aveiros, he will have this shade over him which will be protecting him. needless to say, one should not have any averus. But the idea of chamosa meruba mitzalosa is to teach you that you will have many more zechuyos. So much so that if there is an airspace in the sukkah, an airspace of 3 tefachim, then that makes it possible. The airspace of 3 tefachim, aver gimel tefachim, is posel, it says. Gemara, sukkah, daf yud zayin, amud aleph. So what does the Alshich show from this idea of gimel tefachim? He said it means that when a person does one aveira, maybe he does it twice, Hashem is prepared to overlook the fact that he didn't really do it intentionally, it was a slip of the tongue, or it was whatever. It's not held so much against him. But if he's done it not once, not twice, but 3 times, he's got a chazaka on it, and he's used to it, and it comes naturally to him, he doesn't really feel anymore that it's something he should not do, that is already a problem for a person's personality. So much so that once he's ingrained in doing the aveira so many times, he becomes addicted to it, he's got problems with it, he finds it hard to get out of it, then already a person is in a state where he has to make radical changes to his lifestyle. Ave gimel tefachim posel. But pochus mishlosha kelevud domi. If it's less than 3, levud. Levud is a rule as if it's not even there. It's as if it's all closed up. That's the Gemara Shabbos, that's some design. And therefore, Hashem is more particular if the Avera has been done 3 times. Now the sach has to be made from something which grows from the ground, but what is on the schach may not be mechubal karka. It may not be joined onto the ground. So if you've got a tree with long branches, you can't say, oh, I'll just extend those branches and intertwine them into my trellis work, and I've got schach. It must not be mechubal karka. Why not, says the Alshich? Because we must realize that the gashmius, that the materialism of the world, must not be there to influence our lives and to shield us. It's all very well having personalized number plates, but if we feel as though that's the be-all and end-all of our lives, then we are erroneous. What we have to realize, though, is that is split off, cut off from the ground. I still have to have schach from something from the ground. There is a balance here. Just like you're going to make sure it's not mechubal karka, that you're not drawn so much to the materialistic life of Olam Hazeh, nevertheless, you have to still have something which is from the ground. You cannot cut yourself off completely from what's going on in the world around you. You have to be aware of what's going on in the world. You have to know how it relates to you as a Torah Jew. And you can't simply say, well, my life is worthless, my human functions are worthless because I am somebody who has to be in a complete spiritual level. But we have to nevertheless realize that we have to eat and we have to drink and we have to do things which are materialistic, and you cannot cut yourself off from that. That's why you still nevertheless have to have the schach. Now, the idea of the schach maximum being 20 amos, it can't be higher. Right, the Gemara says, no shalta ba'ena, you can't then see the schach properly, whatever it is. The mystical idea, says the Alshich, is that when a person says, well, I'm not really going to be punished until I'm an adult for my averus. When I'm a child, I'm not really being punished. No children here, I hope. Good. Now, if it's the fact that only subidation one can't come to a person until he's 20 years old, so I'm still a child, I'll do whatever I want, and when I'm 20 I'll start keeping the mitzvahs and I'll stop doing the averus. So as the Alshich HaKadosh, that is the mistake a person makes, because if a person has such an attitude, he will be gone for life. He must not have this attitude saying he will start when he's 20. Obviously if he's about tshuva and so on, that's another matter. But if a person deliberately avoids doing the mitzvahs and does averus for the first 20 years of his life, says the Alshich, that will create for him a kind of diras keva. That will create his life as though it's not a diras arai, and it will ruin him for the rest of his life. So therefore, there is a maximum of 20 amos. On the other scale, a sukkah may not be less than 10 tefachim. Why not? The mystical idea is because it's written by the mystics that the Shekhinah, Hashem's presence, does not come to below than 10 tefachim from the ground. Now that's the thing about the schach. What about the walls? The walls you can make of anything. The schach you can't make of anything, but the walls can be made from any material whatsoever. Why is that? Because the walls represent the Olam Hazeh. The walls represent the gashmi, the materialistic life of this world. And the walls being 2 and a bit, says the Alshich, this represents the things in life which we want. What's the 3 things in life which people want? They want life, chayim, they want children, And so they want a bit of food to eat. So he says, the life and the children, those are the two substantial walls. And the food to eat, well, you can just have the minimum. There's the minimum wall, which is the third wall. You get that food as well, but it hasn't got to be so much. Now, there is also a rule that although there is a minimum width, there's no maximum width of a sukkah. A sukkah can be as big as anything. You can get the whole Am Yisrael into one sukkah. Why is that? Because representing the walls representing your Olam Hazeh, this world, you have no limits. You have so much potential to succeed in Olam Hazeh that a person never realizes how much he's able to accomplish more and more, that when he does come to the Olam HaElyon one day, the biggest punishment that a person has is that he has shown what he could have been. He has shown what potentials he had. You won't be asked, why weren't you like Moshe Rabbeinu? You won't be asked, why weren't you like such and such rabbi? You'll be asked, why weren't you yourself? Because you have unlimited potential, and that is why the sukkah can be of unlimited dimensions. Yes?
I would actually, that meant unlimited spiritual material.
Right, but although the walls are Olam HaGashmi, the only way that you will be able to reach your final goal is to do all the mitzvahs which relate to the materialism of the world. That is to say that you will have your three meals on Shabbos, you will make your bracha when you eat, you're going to shech the animal properly, you're going to soak it with blood, you're going to salt it. All the things that you handle, b'chol drachecho do'ayehu, in all the ways of your life, you will meet Hashem. You will bring Hashem into your life. And this is harking back at my introduction. By bringing Hashem into all our everyday mundane routines, we will become closer to Hashem. And that is a lesson of sukkah. That with that gashmius, with that materialism, we will reach the best heights. And whereas the other religions of the world will talk about sinful things coming from materialism or whatever, then a person's instincts, the person who recognizes what his instincts are, will serve Hashem with those instincts. He won't suppress them. Rav Hirsch writes that three instincts of man are food, sex, and acquisition. And those instincts, we do not suppress them. We divert them. With the food, as I've just explained, the mitzvah of marriage is the first mitzvah of the Torah. Acquisition, to acquire more and more mitzvahs. And with that, we will reach the Olam HaElyon, but only through the prusa of Olam HaZeh. That is the lesson of sukkah. Coming a little bit then into Arba Minim, and I'm going to connect up this idea with Arba Minim. I haven't got much time yet, but I'll just give you out this handout. You just take one of each of these pages. And this is based on something written by Rav Weissmandl. Rav Weissmandl was well known for saving a lot of Jews from the Nazis. He also became famous for writing what we now call hidden codes. Before the age of the computer, he recognized... Yeah, you should have one page with a picture of an Arava on the top right, and an Esrog on another page with an Esrog on the top left. That should be enough to go around. This is to continue the idea. The Jewish people, the Torah, and Hashem are all one. And what he does is something quite fascinating. He finds, with the hidden code, without computers, he finds the Arba Minim, Lulav, Esrog, Hadas, and Arava at intervals of 49 letters. But we'll see how he gets to it. First of all, when the Torah talks about the Arba Minim, it doesn't say the word Lulav. It doesn't say the word Esrog, it doesn't say the word Hadas, and it doesn't say the word Arava, right? It doesn't say Arvei Nochal, I'm sorry, yes. But okay, three out of the four. Esrog, it says Pri Eitz Hadar, a beautiful fruit. All we've got is Torah Shebaal Peh to tell us it's an Esrog. The Lulav, it says Kapos Tomorrow, and Hadas, it says Anaf Eitz Ovos. We've got Chazal and Torah Shebaal Peh to tell us what they are. But what he's done is he finds these actual words hidden in the Torah. Lulav, Esrog, Hadas, and Arava at intervals of 49. 49 representing 7 squared, which is a very important number. We can't go into that now. But he recognizes that the Arba Minim represent this triangle relationship between Hashem, the Torah, and Israel. How does he do that? He says, Bereshis, The emphasis at the beginning of Bereshit is on Elohim. Hashem, the Midas Adem. Bereshit Bara Elohim. And the 13 Midas of Hashem. Hashem has 13 Midas and 30. In fact, Hashem is Echod. Hashem is one. And the Gematria of Echod is 13. Hashem has 13 attributes. He counts Elohim 13 times. Until then, he comes to the first Ayin. Now, he's going to take Yud from Yud Kei Vav Kei. And he's then counting 10 ions, and then he comes to the 11th ion to his Arava at intervals of 49 letters. I know it sounds amazing, but I don't know if I've explained it enough, but what he does is... Right, 13 are the attributes of Hashem. The attributes of Hashem, Echod is the Gematria 13, Hashem is 13. Is there one missing there? There's some spares here. So he deals with Bereshit Shema Midbar and Zavarim for the Abba meaning. Vayikra has a special place, as he deals with elsewhere, because Vayikra is Yud Kei Vav Kei in its own right. The first Yud of Vayikra, at intervals of 7 letters, is spelled Yud Kei Vav Kei. But he deals with Yud Kei Vav Kei, then Yud for Bereshit, Hei for Shemos, Vav for Bamidbar, Hei for Zavarim, taking then 13 times Klal Yisrael in Shemos, so Yisrael mentioned 13 times, he then comes to 5 for the Hay of Yud Kei Vav Kei, to take the Lamed of Lulav, and then the 6th Lamed spells Lulav at intervals of 49 letters. Comes to Bamidbar, there's the Ohel Moed. Now the Torah was taught from the Ohel Moed, so Ohel Moed represents Talmud Torah. Ohel Moed is considered 13 times, Yud Gimel Midas, coming then to the Hay for Hadas, which you count 6 times for the Vav of Yud Kei Vav Kei, and then you get the Hadas and the Pesukim are quoted here. And then for Devarim Hashem Elokeinu, he says the climax is to combine Hashem's Midas Hadin and Midas Horachamim. The Midas Hadin, which we have for Bereshit, we turn with the Arba meaning to Midas Horachamim, so you got in Devarim the idea of Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Elokim, etc. Those expressions 30 times. Come then to your first Aleph for Esrog, count 5 times with Kei Vav Kei and you get Esrog. It's something amazing, and you know, you could say at first, oh well, somebody's just playing around and so on, and you might argue even the missionaries, the Christian missionaries, have started trying to find hidden codes. So unfortunately, the system has come into disrepute. But when the writings, and there are not many of these from Meissmandel, when he wrote these ideas, and they were shown to the Stipler Gaon. The Stipler Gaon said, whoever wrote this must have had Ruach HaKodesh at the time that he wrote this. This was no missionary. This was no computer. This was somebody who did this before computers were ever dreamed of. So that when we take the Lulav, Arava, Hadas, the Esrog, all together, that brings the triangle, Hashem, Klal Yisrael, and the Torah, all dependent on each other. Each one of those triangles are dependent upon the other two. And that is the idea of taking the Arba Minim. So as we said in our opening, we bring Hashem into our lives. We are dependent on the Torah in our triangle. We are dependent on Hashem in that triangle. And that's the triangle which is brought out from the Sukkah and from the Arba Minim. It just occurred to me, in fact, that Esrog is the Gematria 610, and Torah is the Gematria 611, Well, there is a rule that you're allowed to be one out. Ephraim and Manasseh, Kiruvim and Shimon, Yehuli. Bala Torim says Saint Gematria, and from there we learn you can be one out. Esrog represents the tzaddik who is also learning Torah. Esrog represents the one who is the ultimate of perfection. That even though all the Arba Minim come together, all Klal Yisrael have to come together in unison in Achdus, the Esrog is not tied up with the others. The Esrog has kedusha. The tzaddik has to have a little bit of havdalah, separate from the others, and that way we maintain our dveikus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, thank you very much for listening to my contribution of mystics. Hashem should grant us a happy, peaceful year for all Klal Yisrael. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah.